Session number 17741.
Yeah.
So the two of us were in the church and thinking it would be a good idea to appear non-military in case the Germans were arriving. We used to put on the cassock and cotters and generally sort of act the goat, both of us being about 17 or 18. Anyway, there was a knock on the door, which was usually the time the sergeant came round. So we asked who was there and the password, and it was given. And the sergeant was at the back of the queue, and there was a real army major, our old TA, Lieutenant Colonel in the from the Great War. And they didn't seem to be very happy at what we were doing. So we were in a bit of disgrace after that, and never allowed very, very far away from HQ. What did I do then? Oh, then I attempted to join the Air Force. That was the next go.
Why did you decide to change?
Well, I wanted to get in the war, you see. And see, my basic problem was, and has always been, I never had any education. I left school when I was 15 with nothing. You see, anybody that could convert decimals to fractions, we regarded as some sort of superior being. That the mathematical side of things, I just never got the hang of it. So never having any formal education at all, I was precluded from all the things that I would have liked to have done.
So what happened to your attempt to get into the RAF?
Well, in those days, it was very, very easy to get in. So I didn't tell my parents because they would have tried to stop me. Yes, I wasn't 18. That's right, I was still only 17, underage for some things. So I went down to the big RAF permanent recruiting headquarters in Euston Road and put in for aircrew. Now, I did all the medical, had the six doctors and all that caper, and had a educational test. And then I got the letter to say that I would be sent for sometime later on because I wanted to get in aircrew. But looking back, I couldn't have got in. I could have got in as an air gunner. And I think that's what it was. Anyway, after about 3 months, got a letter back stating they were so full up with aircrew, there was nothing they could do. So when I was 18, I saw this advert on the Armoured Corps. You know, the chap sitting on a tank and the Armoured Corps needs you. And I thought, well, this is for me. So I went down to the recruiting centre in Holloway Road in about February 42 when I was 18 and joined the Armoured Corps. I had left the office job by then. I'd got a job for a while working in a... There was a place in London by the Angel, and the chappie that ran it had been was a special constable inspector, and they did all that business with birds and slides for schools and there's a word, isn't there, for stuffing birds was a fancy name for it. Anyway, I worked there for about 3 or 4 months, and that was very boring, and bombing was going on and that. So I then went to work in a bakery for about 6 weeks because nobody would employ you because you were going to join up, you see. So I worked in a bakery for about a while. And then one of the inspectors in my dad said, while you're waiting to go into the army, my father-in-law's got a farm. Would you like to go down and help out with the harvest? Which I did. Then in September 42, I got a papers to go and join the Armoured Corps, which I'd applied for. So I went to Bovington in about August 42.
What did they train you to do?
Tank Corps. That was what they see. I joined the Armoured Corps. That was I was able to get in a volunteer for the Armoured Corps and went to the Armoured Corps. And of course, you did 6 weeks training in a primary training wing at Bovington. But having been in the LDB and the Home Guard, I was pretty good at all this because I liked it. I got a good idea of what was going on. Also, the great advantage was when you went to join the army as volunteers, if you'd been in the Home Guard, you went in your uniform. So you were way ahead of most of the others, you see. You'd got a good head start. And you knew the system, you knew how to get on. And a lot of boys had to learn this, you see, whereas we didn't. We we got a good idea of how to survive. And then after 6 weeks, we went down to the 58th Training Regiment and did 8 months training to become members of the of a unit. So, in as we were all volunteers, about 8 or 9% were selected for OCTU. I'd got superb reports, but obviously didn't get the to go to pre-OCTU because I hadn't got a score with cert. That was essential if you were going to get anywhere. You had to have a, I had no score cert, so that was out. But you were allowed a privilege of going to whatever unit in the Armoured Corps you wanted, unless it was full up or going abroad, which you wouldn't be told. So I put in for the North Hants Yeomanry and went there as a gunner mech, which was horrible.
Why was it so horrible?
Well, they were all TA. They were all pre-war TA soldiers. And they didn't like strangers.
And the job was called a gunner what?
I was a gunner mechanic. That's the lowest form of life in a tank, you see.
And where were the Northamptonshire Yeomanry based?
When I first went there, they were up in... Oh, it was somewhere in the north. I've forgotten where it was now. Anyway, it was very, very horrible. It was a horrible unit. They were full of bullshit is the only word I can describe it. The training was appalling. The conditions were appalling. And we then moved up within a very short time. We went up to North Dalton in Yorkshire, which I do remember well. And we were over an old pub which had been a farmhouse. And we were given these old palliasses with straw. The blankets were so filthy and so smelly they were unbelievable. And we all washed down. There was about 20 of us. We all washed downstairs in one cold tap. And these metal basins. So within a fortnight, everybody had scabies from head to toe. We all had it, scabies. And the bullshit still went on with the nonsense. When we came off the tank part where we were covered in mud, we had to put on our second best battle dress and fall in and be marched up to the vicarage, which was where the headquarters were, to have our meals. And then we all marched back, took off our best battle dress, or our second best battle dress, put on our denim overalls, and all went to work on the tanks. Once a week we were taken by truck to RAF Driffield, which was a pre-war RAF station, and we were allowed to have a shower. So when we all got scabies from head to toe, they shaved off all our heads and put this blue gentian on, and the treatment for the scabies where we were covered was you went and saw the MO and he said right and gave us some orders. You went into the next room where there were two medical corporals and they'd got two big basins and they got these brushes that you would put paste on ceilings. You had all your clothes off and they covered you in this white benzene or benzol, I'm not sure what it was, but when it got on your private quarters, there's nothing ever I've experienced like it. And you were allowed to go and lie on your bed, or lie on the floor where we were, lie on the floor for an hour, excuse duties. So, when they started coming round with glider pilots, suicide missions, we had a feeling that the Germans couldn't possibly be as bad to us as our own unit was. And everybody volunteered en masse. There was nothing we didn't volunteer for, just to get away from this lot.
Which particular ones did you apply for?
Glider pilots, parachutists. But of course, looking back now, we realise that units got rid of the big troublemakers, if they could. It was difficult to get replacements for the ordinary run-of-the-mill like myself. You know, it didn't cause any bother. And also, there were fellas much better fitted physically than I was. Please tell me if I'm boring you with all this length of detail.
This is excellent.
You sure? I'm talking about things I haven't talked about for years. So as long as it's what you're interested in. But if I bore you, tell me to stop it, because it's...
No, I want to encourage you to tell me more. So how did you come to be in SOE then?
Well, this is the start of realizing I have no education. Now, you have to go back to basics. When I went to college, which I don't know how I got in there, I got a scholarship, which meant my father and mother had to pay any fee. They didn't have to pay tuition, but they had to pay for the uniform, the sports gear. Now, even in those days, it was a shilling a meal to have lunch in the refectory. Now, can you imagine what my parents must have gone without to give me these uniforms, the sports gear, the clothes, the books? All you got free was the tuition. Yet never one word did they ever make me feel I was indebted to them. So what happened in the Catholic colleges, they had a system which, I don't know whether it was prevalent in other places, but they were a French order of brothers, although most of them were English, but the director was French. Now, we went to school in those days on a Saturday morning. Now, they had a system there, but everything you did was recorded. Your conduct was down from 0 to 20. Your politeness and the way you were turned out, that was 10. Then every academic activity, all the histories and all the geographers and all that, you got so many points for what you'd done. Now, the total maximum was 120. From 120 to 80, you got a red certificate stating that your work had been excellent. From 60 to 80, you got a blue, which said you were good. Below 60, there was the Foreign Legion, or killing yourself, because you wasn't very good at going home with that. So what happened? Every Saturday morning, the brother director came round, and there we had a raised dais all the way round and a built-in desk and the modern blackboards which were in the wall. We'd never seen them before. And he came round and we all got up and said, "Good morning, Brother Director." And he said, "Good morning, boys." Now, after 70 years or 60 years, I can remember there was a little swine there and he was top every single week. He was useless at sport, he was useless at anything, but he was great. So every week, the books were upside down, the brother director came in, sat down, and lifted the first book over. I think his name was Osgood. And he said, "Osgood, 118. I am proud of you, boy. You are clever. You are an example." And he handed him his book, and he was sat over there. Or he stood over there, you see. Now, there'd be about 28 to 30 in the class. Now, this went on every week, in every class. We got down to the 90s. By this time, the enthusiasm was wearing off a bit, and there was a lot more up there than there were down here. So when you got down to the... You might just get a red if you were lucky. Now, don't forget, this book went home with the certificate, and Daddy had to read it and sign it. Now, my father never touched me, but I didn't like letting him down. So all the bright boys were lined up every week, the same faces, there they were, 119s, 120s, 120s, way over us. And we came down to the hardcore. There'd be about six or seven left. Now, I was good in all subjects. Maths I was hopeless in. And being one of the few scholarship boys, the rest who fathers paid for them didn't like us because we weren't like they were. See, we'd no business being there because we were peasants. But we'd been used to fighting our way through life, because when I first went to school, you had to pass two Protestant schools. And the first day when I went to the Catholic college, a fella hauled up to me and he said, "Oh, you're one of those scholarship boys." So I said, "Yeah, that's right." So he said, "What does your father do?" So I said, "He's a police inspector." He said, "How terribly unfortunate." So, of course, I thumped him straight away, didn't I? And that was the start of a long career. Most of the people I thumped, unfortunately, did thump better than I did, and they got the worst of it. Anyway, when we're getting down to the low 60s, there's perhaps three of us left, and the brother director says, "Schmies," and he's holding the book like it's disease. He says, "You are a disgrace, boy. You have no business being here. Stand over there." So when you do that week in and week out, you get the idea that there's a lot of guys brighter there than you are. So that's sort of a school. But it didn't bother me. You know, I was I knew I wasn't very bright, so I was happy. I never suffered from the illusion that I was clever.
But so, you were relating this to joining the SLE.
Yeah. So this is how we knew where we were. So when the SOE came round, we wanted to get out of the army. This was the prime motive. So one Sunday morning, we're in the tank park. This officer comes around and says, "Gather around, everybody." And he says, "What we're looking for is volunteers to join special forces to jump into occupied territories to help the resistance." So he said, "You mustn't discuss this. Because we were terrified, you know, in the army, with the fear of death, like anything like that. Not to discuss it, but in an hour, I will call you all together again from when you've done your normal jobs. And I want you just to call out your name and number if you want to be considered." So there was two or three of us there. And Jesse Gardner, who later died when his parachute failed to open, you may have heard about him. He was in the North Hampshire Yeomanry with me, although I don't recall him having much to do with him before. So anyway, all of the sort of fellas with the same outlook as my life thought, "This will be good, you know." And we weren't terribly, it's silly, we weren't terribly afraid of, we didn't think what we were going to do. So somebody said to me, "Jesse's on leave." So I said, "Don't worry. One of us will call out, we know his name, we'll call his name and number out." So he said, "You can't do that." I said, "Yeah, Jesse, if we go and Jesse doesn't go, because he hates it." So I said, "All right, I'll do it." So when the bloke came round, it was arranged that I would shout out first, you see, my name and number. So I said, "Smith, 144-01047. I said, "Right." And then all the others shouted out theirs, because there was about 10. And then in what I presumed to be a different voice, I gave Jesse Gardner's number and name. And the bloke said, "Oh, that's right, you'll hear or you won't hear from us. Your company office will tell you." Anyway, a couple of days later, Jesse comes back from leave and we said, "Hey, you're a hero." I said, "What do you mean?" "We said you were going to parachute into occupied territories to help the resistance." He said, "You are not." I said, "The man came round and we all put our names down." He said, "Yeah, I missed it, didn't I? I was on leave." I said, "Yeah, I put your name down for you." And Jesse never backed off. So we heard nothing then. For ages, we got turned down by the paratroops, we got turned down by the glider pilots. Then one day the message came, "Pack your gear, a lorry will take you." And we went to somewhere around Oxford, to this huge manor house, and they had these, it was a spring or late summer. I can see these several tents now, and in the tents there was beds, there was sheets, there was pillows and cases, there was chocolates, there was cigarettes. And beautiful sergeants who treated us like human beings. And they said, "Now what you've got to do is put your gear out, we'll show you where to go to the toilets, have a shower, have a wash. Then all come back here and we're going to have a little talk to you with the training staff. And then you'll have a meal." So we thought, this is special forces, you know, this is a way to fight a war. So that all went on. Then the next day, you see, what they wanted was radio operators, but we didn't know this. But we knew after a little while that that was what it was going to be. So the next day, this officer's got there, and we're all out there, and he's got a signal sergeant, and we're on an open desks with Morse code being sent through an amplifier. So Jesse Gardner says to me, "We're in trouble here." I said, "I know." Because I could never understand Morse in the training regiment, you see. They gave me 3, and they gave Jesse 4. Well, that was, see, we only had 6 weeks. The gunnery, everything, I was great, but I couldn't get Morse. I just couldn't do it. I didn't understand it. So Tom Ennie says to me, "Don't worry," he said. "The bloke's sending groups of 5. Write anything down," he said. "You'll be all right, long as they don't see you're not doing it." So I said, "Great." Said to Jess, "Write anything down, groups of 5. Well, of course, being me, I didn't realise, and I overdid it, as I'm wont. And I was sitting there quite casually, you see, writing. And this officer comes around, he said, "Everything all right, son?" I said, "Oh, fine, thank you, sir." They were looking for operators for Yugoslavia, weren't they? And they were looking for good guys. We didn't notice. So he says, are you sure it's all right? I said, oh, yes, sir, no problem. He said, can I look at your sheet? I said, yes, sir. He got the copy, hadn't he, what was sent? He said, what is this? I said, what they're sending, sir? No, it's not, he said. Oh, I said, I'm sorry, sir, I'm a bit rusty. I haven't been doing any lately. So he said, that's okay. And he wrote an R down. And he caught Jesse out and he wrote an R down. I said to Jesse, we've got to do something about this, you know. He said, what can we do? Now, to touch your paybook, that was clink for donkey's years, you know. I mean, a lance corporal could have you put away for 6 months without any hesitation. So I said, I don't know what we can do. I said, yes, I do. I said, what, so we got your paybook? I said, yeah. So he had four on his ability to do Morse. So in there was pens and writing things. Of course, I thought they didn't know, but obviously they were way ahead of me. So we got the ink to look exactly the same, and I said, well, put a one in front of your four and put a one in front of my three. I said, well, go up to the officer and tell him that we weren't allowed to be near radios, but at the training school we were very good. Sees this officer walking around with the board. Sort of, excuse me, sir, may we speak to you? Certainly, son. So I said, well, I believe I wasn't very good on the Morse, but I was very good at the training regimen. I could do 13 or 14 words a minute, which they said was excellent, but they didn't want radio operators in the tank corps, so we had to be gunners, so we got a bit rusty. Have you got your paybook, he says. So, yes, sir. Oh, he said. He put PT. And he put PT for Jesse.
PT meaning?
Potential trainee.
And R meant?
Out. Reject. Back to the mill. So he goes away, and we said, I don't know, Jess, do you? What do you think? And of course, I'm terrified of heights. I mean, I had no school certificate. I didn't know more, so I'm a coward. I'm terrified of heights. There's no way I should have been anywhere near it. So anyway, some weeks later, call to the company office. You've all been posted. That was three of us. Apparently, they didn't take more than one or two from any unit. And Sir Neil Martin, he was in the North Hampshire Yeomanry, but he was an officer. We never met him, but he became quite famous, didn't he, in the Special Forces. So where do we go? We go to Henley-on-Thames, Countess Gardens, in the middle of Henley-on-Thames, and there's only about possibly 35 to 40 of us British. And we're living in three knitting huts in the gardens, and we got our own cookhouse. And the next morning, all the rooms there, desks, all got headphones, and the front desk has got a Morse key, and there's about six or seven rooms for us. Jesse's in another room with another sergeant. I'm in a room with a sergeant called Sid Neat, who's a signals operator from before the war. And Sid can send and talk, and Sid can do everything because he's done it for donkey's years. So he says, wait, I'll just give you a little run through at five words a minute. Of course, I don't know what the hell he's talking about, do I? I was sending. He says, how did you get here? So I can do 13 words a minute, sir, but I'm not very good at the moment. It's outside you. He said, you put that in yourself, didn't you? So I said, yes. Now, I think they were ahead of us, because otherwise they weren't stupid. He says, now look, we've got 7 weeks or something for you to get up to take your wireless operator in lines, class two. That's 14 words a minute. He said, can you do it? I said, I don't know, but I'll try. Now, I didn't think he'd told anybody, but of course he had, hadn't he? They were watching everybody. So I used to sit in at night. You see, I was lucky I didn't drink and I didn't like dancing. And girls weren't interested in little guys like me. So I studied, I got people to help me, and I got up to 14 words a minute. And once I got the hang of it, I was as good as anybody. And so that was the first major hurdle. And then we went up to ME65 up in Milton Hall. No, we went up to Fawley Court.
Before we go on to Fawley Court, I don't quite understand why you made the alteration, why you were so keen not to get rejected.
Well, I didn't want to go back to the Armour Corps. That was basically. I understood that it was going to be extremely frightening what I was going to get myself into. And of course, I was terrified of heights, which I still am. If I see a film, my hands sweat. My feet ache. So, before this, we had to have psychologist interviews. We had to be interviewed by psychologists. This was in the early... before we went to Fawley Court, before we went to the radio training, obviously. We were had interviewed by psychologists. There were two militaries and two civilians. And they said, this is perfectly true, they said to me, why do you want to join this? So I said, I don't know, basically. And I thought, I may as well be honest. I said, basically, I'm terrified of heights. He said, yeah, but you're going to be a parachutist. I said, I know. I said, but I know if I can overcome the parachuting bit, I can do the rest. And much to my amazement and the other questions, they must have passed me as... They may have been very hard up, mightn't they? I went on to the rest. Then we did all the training at Fawley Court. Do you want to carry on with the brief?
Please, if you carry on with...
After we'd done the radio training, and thanks to Sergeant Neat, long will I be in his debt for getting me through this system, we went up to Fawley Court, which was a huge place where we met all sorts of instructors. Quite a lot of emphasis on physical training. Now, I was hopeless at anything physical. Shooting with the ranges underneath. We were given these Colt 44s and go through these darkened ranges, and figures used to pop up and all this caper. After many runs, the instructor said to me, look, the only chance you've got, son, is by hitting them on the head with the butt, because you're never going to hit anything. So I thought, well, that's reasonable. We did quite a lot of physical exercises. We did schemes. We used to go out at night. It was all work up there. Yeah, we went through all the training, and then we sat in little huts and sent messages to each other to get the procedure off. And I think once we got the hang of the wireless, I don't think we did a lot else but wireless up there. Then we went up to ME65 in Peterborough. And that's when the fun started up there, and that was great.
What does ME65 mean?
Military establishment. The other one, we were STS-54. That was Specialist Training School. That was the Henley-on-Thames lot. And then the Milton Hall was ME65, because they all had different numbers, which meant different things, you know, to the people that knew what was going on. There we did all sorts of training, explosives, ciphers, decoding, practicing reception committee work, came down to Manchester to do, or went up to Manchester to do parachute jumping. I was so frightened I wouldn't do it. We were doing it with the Americans. And what I did, the Americans were one short of the 9 or 10, which were, we were in groups to